Les colloques du Collège de France.
Thank you very much, Edith and Claire, for the opportunity to speak alongside such distinguished other speakers. I very much feel like I'm a small player here, and I think I'm probably an ex-inactivationist rather than a current, as I'm now working in the genomics core at the CRIC. But I'm going to tell you today a little bit about a project that has been kind of a long time in the making, from when I was in James Turner's lab to now. So in James's lab, we're interested in sex differences in sex chromosomes. So sexual dimorphism is prevalent throughout the animal and plant kingdom, and the most obvious phenotype of that is the size difference between males and females. So here we've got rodents, we've got cows, we've got primates. And usually males are the bigger sex, but occasionally it's the other way around. And in humans as well. And these phenotypic differences are typically attributed to gonad-produced hormonal differences between males and females. But it also should be remembered that males and females are different in every single cell based on the sex chromosome complement. And hormonal and genetic differences contribute to differences in disease susceptibility, as mentioned by Agnieszka previously. So if we want to be able to understand sex differences, we need to be able to separate out the impact of hormones and genetics. And it's previously been reported that male and female embryos of multiple species show morphological differences in the pre-implantation stages, and that includes, as up here, rat, cow, and primates. So it seems like maybe the embryo is actually quite a good model, because pre-implantation embryos, males and females, are genetically different, but they're not yet capable of producing gonadal sex hormones as they don't have gonads. But if we're going to use the pre-implantation mouse embryo as a model, we also need to take into account the fact that through pre-implantation development, as we've heard this morning, dosage compensation is also taking place. So just to whiz through this brief cartoon here, in pre-implantation development, we have imprinted X inactivation resulting from the expression and then upregulation and coating of EXIST. And then at the morula going into the blastocyst stage, when we have lineage specification, we've got the extra embryonic tissue going on to form the placenta. The paternal X continues to be inactivated, whereas in the inner cell mass going on to form the epiblast and then the embryo proper, we have downregulation that exists from the paternal X chromosome, and then we have random X inactivation, as we've already heard. So we'd like to use this model to understand transcriptional differences that underlie the previously described morphological differences in sexes in pre-implantation development. And we chose to take a single-cell approach, which enables the visibility of lineage specification and at the same time dosage compensation. And we chose three different time points to hopefully capture both of those processes. So the most straightforward question to ask might be, what's the difference between XX females and XY males? But as alluded to on the previous slide, sex chromosome kind of variant mice can be utilized to ask other interesting questions, such as what's the effect of X dosage in pre-implantation development? And for this, we could use a mouse that has a single maternally derived X chromosome, an XMO mouse, and compare that with an XX embryo. We can also ask questions about Y dosage. So again, using that same XMO mouse, but this time comparing with an XMY, i.e. the presence of the Y or the absence of the Y. And finally, we could also ask the question, does the parental origin of the X chromosome impact on development? So we can begin to ask questions about X imprinting. So in this case, comparing an XMO embryo with an embryo with a single paternally derived X chromosome, an XPO. So in order to ask these questions, we need to be able to look at the transcriptome of the single cells, but we also need to genotype the single cells. We need to know, are they XX, XO, XY? So XX versus XY is quite straightforward transcriptomically, but XX versus XO is less straightforward. So we decided to take an approach of genome and transcriptome sequencing. And the workflow briefly is as follows, that we take our embryos, we enzymatically and mechanically dissociate them, we collect them in plates and then process them via oligo-DT bound to magnetic beads. And this pulls the mRNA out of the soup. And then the mRNA is processed for cDNA and RNA-seq. And then the gDNA is left. We clean that up, perform a whole genome amplification, PCR-based whole genome amplification, and then use Oxford Nanopore sequencing to essentially generate very low coverage carrier type data. So as I mentioned, we have some sex chromosome variant mice, and they come from a couple of different crosses. And so we've got the dad here in this first cross being an XY, and the mum is an inversion XX. So the inversion X, for those who are unfamiliar, is basically 90% of one X chromosome is inverted. And this impacts on meiosis and results in essentially gametes that do not have a sex chromosome, as shown here. These are not produced at Mendelian ratios, which makes this project slightly challenging, but it does make it interesting as well. And the second cross that we've used to generate the kind of no sex chromosome or O gamete from dad is this XY star dad. So as an overview of the data, so we, as I mentioned, we've selected three time points, E2, E2.5, and E3.5. And here in the different colors, we've got the different genotypes. And they're a bit too small to see, I apologize for that. But we've got the XY in pink. We've got the XX in this kind of bluey green. We've got the XPO in this kind of greeny green. And we've got the XMO in this browny green, and some other genotypes, which I won't touch on today. And in terms of our data processing, we used a sex-specific alignment. So we aligned genotypes or cells that had a Y chromosome to a Y reference, and those that did not have a Y chromosome to a non-Y reference. We then merged the counts and loaded that into Surat for kind of standard single-cell QC. And this is a dimensionality reduction, a UMAP of the ensuing data. So clusters were generated by the Leiden method and then annotated. So we've got E2 here, we've got E2.5 here. And then at E3.5, we used marker genes from the literature to annotate this as trophectoderm, this cluster of cells here as the inner cell mass going onto epiblast. And then this kind of gray cluster here in the middle as uncommitted, i.e. no specific gene signature. So this rich data set has enabled us to address a multitude of fascinating questions, but in the interest of time here, I'll focus on X imprinting, as it's most pertinent to the subject of this meeting. So X imprinting involves comparing XMO and XPO embryos fundamentally. So if we first look at the XPO as a model, it's previously been reported that these embryos show a growth deficit relative to wild-type embryos at E7.5 and E10.5. So we first asked the question, is that growth deficit also present at E3.5? So we performed immuno using CDX2 as a marker for TE and ANOG for ICM and epi cells, and then we counted the cells. So as you can see here, if we compare our XY to XX embryos, we have no significant observable difference. But then if we put an XPO embryo in there, it kind of looks a bit stunted and a bit sad. And they all look like that. So if we put the look at the counts, we have XPO embryos were significantly smaller than both XX and XY embryos. And interestingly, XY embryos were slightly but significantly larger, or in terms of cell numbers, than XX embryos. So then if we go back to the single-cell transcriptomic data and the UMAP, if we just highlight the XPO embryos only, we can see those here in the light blue color. And they tend to fall kind of almost between clusters, so between uncommitted and TE. And if we look at that as a proportion, so here we've got the genotype and then the proportion of cells per genotype falling into each of the E3.5 clusters, we can see that for both XY and XX, we've got representation in the ICM cluster, the TE cluster, and some in the uncommitted cluster. But for XPO, we've got mainly representation in the TE and the uncommitted, with very few cells in the ICM. And then finally, we also looked at marker genes in the TE cluster of both early and late TE development. So looking at CDX2 as a marker of early TE development, we see that for XPO, there's no significant difference when compared with XX and XY. But for expression of later TE markers, such as eomesodermin and ELF5, we can see that there's a significant downregulation or lack of upregulation of expression of these genes in XPO relative to the XX and XY. Taken together, we therefore concluded that that XPO embryos therefore show a growth deficit at E3.5, and this seems to be reflected in transcriptional signature. So then we considered what mechanisms could be underlying this delay. And the first, probably kind of obvious mechanism is maybe an exist-dependent global reduction of X-linked gene expression, i.e. exist is shutting down the single X chromosome in these embryos, and therefore they're lacking all the X-linked transcripts. So the first question to address there might be, is there transcriptional downregulation? And then the second hypothesis we'd consider is maybe there's an exist-independent growth repressor that's expressed from XP, and so exposed in this kind of XP-only situation, or a growth promoter expressed from XM that's just not present in the XP. So to address that, we can return to the XPO embryos and first ask, okay, do we see exist expression? We know that it's previously been reported, and so we repeated the RNA FISH to show that in our hands, if we look at XY embryos, we see a single gene, ATP7A, being our probe here, being expressed in most cells. If we look at XX, we can see that most cells have an exist cloud and a separate ATP7A focus. Whereas in XPO, we've kind of got 50-50. We've got some ATP7A alone in some cells, and we've got some exist clouds, suggesting, again, similar to the published literature, that we've got exist expression at E3.5 in about 50% of cells in these embryos. We then also looked at a histone mark to have a look whether or not we are seeing downstream silencing. And here we looked at H2A K119 ubiquitination. And in males, in XY males, we saw basically no staining. In XX females, we saw 75% of cells having a cloud. And in XPOs, again, we saw this kind of intermediate 50 to 75%. And then finally, looking at the transcriptional data, we looked at X to autosome ratios. And so we can see here the different genotypes on the x-axis and the different time points. And in the XPO embryo, relative to XY and XX, we can see that we have a significant downregulation of transcription from the X chromosome. So there is transcriptional downregulation. But in order to test this hypothesis fully, we need to remove exist. So then if we return to those same points that I've described to you previously and add an exist knockout on the XPO, so we end up with an XPO exist delta, what do we see? So first, looking at X to autosome ratios, we can see that by removing exist, we remove an element of that transcriptional downregulation. And the pattern in the XPO exist delta through time resembles, although is not exactly the same, as the XMO, the other exoaneuploid, and the XMY. If we then look in terms of immunos and cell numbers, A3.5, the X-exist delta O has significantly more cells than the XPO, again suggesting that we're able to rescue this reduction in cell number at E3.5 by removing exist. Interestingly, XMO embryos also have a non-significant difference compared to XY, so again suggesting it's not an X-aneuploidy effect. We then look at the transcriptomic data. The XPO exist delta embryos cluster more closely are nearer neighbors to the XPO cells rather than the other genotypes. And this is reflected by their constitution of more cells in the TE and the uncommitted cluster, and again, very few in the ICM. And unsurprisingly, based on these data, we also see a similar pattern in terms of expression of TE markers, i.e. Lower expression of late TE markers in the exist knockout when compared to the wild-type embryos. And then finally, we also looked at E10.5, where it had previously been reported that XPO embryos show a growth deficit. And the X-exist minus O, or the X-exist, or the XPO delta exists, the XPO with exist knockout embryos, are also smaller than XX and XY. So we have kind of two things going on here. And we conclude that the X parent of origin the parent of origin of the X influences pre- and post-implantation development in a way that's independent of exist. And so We were then interested in trying to identify potential candidates that might support this second hypothesis, so a growth repressor expressed from XP or growth promoter expressed from XM. And very briefly, we performed a differential expression analysis, and we took a pooled genotyping approach where we reasoned that we could search for XP bias genes in all of our XP expressing genotypes and compare those with those without an XP, and XM bias genes could be identified in a converse, comparing all XM containing genotypes against those that do not contain an XM. And as you can see on the lower plot first, we've got a schematic of the X chromosome going from centromere to telomere. And above the horizontal, we have potential XP bias genes, and below we have XM bias genes. And here we have a few examples showing the normalized expression per genotype at E2 and E2.5. And so we identified EXIST, and we identified the FTHL17 family and ROX5. These are all previously reported in the literature. But we also identified a number of other novel candidates, both for XP and XM. And most candidates, as you can see, were predominantly expressed from XP, with very few from XM, which is interesting. And there's representation from multiple multi-copy gene families, the ROXs, the PRAMLs, TCLs, and FTHL17. And many of these are also expressed in the male germline. So all of these things are kind of interesting and are on the cusp of where we're at with this project. So we're currently looking at published data sets for evidence of canonical or non-canonical imprinting at these loci, and also testing some candidates by siRNA knockdown. And finally, acknowledgements. So James's lab in particular, Ore, who's sitting just in the audience, and Waz, who've been my kind of co-collaborators on this project, the rest of the lab for being incredibly supportive, the Crick BRF, and the Crick Science Technology Platform, Genomics, where I am now, and Bioinformatics. And thank you for listening.
Collège de France, le savoir en illimité. Retrouvez tous nos contenus audio et vidéo sur notre site. Collège-2-France.fr, les plateformes de podcast et nos chaînes YouTube.